Yesterday I had the honor of presiding at the wedding of Kara and Mike. Kara, our parishioner and choir member here, and as always at weddings, there is a cast of characters. You two remember this well, most recently. When there's a cast of characters, you never know what's going to happen. And at the rehearsal, we went through it fine, but there was a ring bearer and a flower girl. The flower girl was there, and she did her job very well, and the ring bearer didn't come to the rehearsal. Always provokes a little anxiety on the day of the wedding when the ring bearer has never been in the church before, but he showed up, and I came into the hall, and there were hundreds of people, it seemed, in here making lots of noise, and there he was. So I went over and knelt down, because he was all of 6 years old, and I said to him, "Hi, I'm Beth, and you must be the ring bearer." So he took his left hand, because he was holding the rings in his right hand, and said, "Hello, I'm Eric." So I shook his hand and said, "Hi, Aaron," because I couldn't hear. There were so many people in here. "Hi, Aaron, it's lovely to meet you." And he said, "It's not Aaron, it's Eric, E-R-I-C. I said, "Oh, excuse me, it's very noisy in here, and I'm sorry I didn't hear you properly." Great. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure you'll do a fine job. So we carry on. Of course, he does a perfect job. He walks straight up the aisle, smiling, looking very handsome in his little tuxedo. Dips the rings over, doesn't drop them. All is well. After the service, someone is heard to say to Eric, "Eric, you look really great in your lovely suit." And he says, "I know." Then I went over to him and said, got down again and said, "Eric, I just want to say thank you. You did a really great job as ring bearer." And he looked me in the eye and said, "I am very aware of that." I said, "Good. Right. I'll just go crawl into my corner now." Totally intimidated by a six-year-old. And it kind of made me think about several things. And one, it reminded me of David, who we hear about again today. Last week, he'd stolen Bathsheba from her husband Uriah and sent Uriah out to war in the front lines so he would be killed, so he could have Bathsheba for his own self. He is a powerful man, full of confidence, ruddy, good-looking, sort of like our little ring bearer, and very full of himself. And he does what he needs to do to get what he wants. And yet, today, he is faced with this story that Nathan offers him. A story of a man who has nothing, but has taken this small lamb into his heart. And it's the only piece of livestock he has, but he treats it like his own daughter, it says in the reading. Sort of like some of us do with our pets. It's an old pet story. And there is this lamb, and this lamb lives with this fellow, and it even sleeps in his bed, and everyone loves the lamb. And the king comes along and says, "Well, I'm going to slaughter a feast." And so takes his lamb, because he doesn't want to bother getting one of his own, and slaughters the lamb. And Nathan tells this story to David, and David says, "That's awful. That's terrible. What a horrible thing. He should be killed over and over again for that horrible thing he's done." And Nathan says, "That was you last week. That was you. That is what you did with Bathsheba and Uriah. And your life is going to be hell because that's what you did. Your children will die, your wives will go elsewhere, and that is what you have some recompense for that." Because we all know that no matter what we do, whether for good or for ill or for not knowing any better, there are consequences. And David is faced very strongly with his consequences. And he says, "Forgive me. I have sinned against the Lord." Now, Nathan says, "Well, yes, you have, absolutely. And yes, you're going to have times of trials and difficulty because of that, but you will live because God has forgiven you." I'm pretty sure David maybe wasn't so sure that he wanted to live at that moment with all the things that he would have to face. And the reason my ring bearer made me think of David, because I was thinking after I was put in my place by this lovely six-year-old, of his confidence, his strength, his cute good looks, and his presence, and thought, I wonder what his life will bring him. Because he's six. There's not much you can do really wrong at 6 years old. But he's going to grow up, and something will happen in his life that will bring him great consequences, for good or for ill. And he, like I and like every one of us, will face that moment. And he may not want to stand proud and say, it's Eric, E-R-I-C. He may want to run for the hills and wish that something else had happened. That's the way life is. We are human, oh so very human, and when we fall fast and hard. And I said a prayer for little Eric yesterday, thinking about that. Divinity, though, is what is grace. The thing that we can't count on, because we never know when it's going to happen, a true and great gift that is given to us, and that is totally free. We don't have to accept it. David did not need to say, I've sinned. He could have said, well, that's too bad about the poor bloke and a sheep, and that's horrible, but that has nothing to do with me. No, it's not the same thing. Have you ever said that? It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing, because it was different for me, but you know that it wasn't. But grace is that thing that comes along and says, yes, you're gonna have some consequences, and you're going to have to live through them, and you're going to have to find people to walk with you through those consequences, to stand for you and be proud of you and strong for you and care for you when you can't do that for yourself. But there is grace, and you are forgiven, and you will live. And in today's reading to Ephesians, we understand why we are meant to live. I beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called, to the one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. We are each one of us called. We know what David was called to. He was called to be a great king in the end. He was called to be one of the forebears, the ancestors of Jesus. Despite his humanity, despite his mistakes, despite his pride and arrogance, despite all of that. And each one of us is called despite all of whatever adjectives you might add to yourself, no matter what they are. Now in here it says that some are called to be prophets and evangelists and pastors and teachers, but those people are called to two specific jobs to help the saints do their work. That's everybody. That's each one of us. It's all the people in this world who don't even know they are that thing. A saint. We are all called to be that which the light shines through, for each other, for the world in general, and sometimes for ourselves, the hardest of all. So each one of us is called not just to do something. Now every one of you has done a job in your life or done something you thought, yes, this is it, this is what I'm called to do. Absolutely. I wouldn't be here if I didn't think I was called to be here, to do this job. But it's not actually about what we do, it's about who we are, to be someone, to be that person who speaks the truth in love, to be the person who is standing firm in the Spirit of God. And it doesn't matter what our age is, whether we're six, and we're called to be in that moment a reminder to an almost 50-year-old that there is grace and there is beauty and strength in youth. It doesn't matter if we're an 80-year-old and we think we can't do anything anymore, just to be an example and a moment of hope for those of us who aren't there yet, and a moment of grace, that's a great calling. We're each called to be something at different times in our lives. The other day, I was visiting my cousins in Arnprior. I was up the valley, and I thought, wait, it's 9 o'clock. I was at my brother's cottage, and I realized 9 o'clock means that in Arnprior at the Tim Hortons, my cousins gather, my male cousins, the 85, 83, and 82-year-old cousins. And I thought, I haven't seen them in a long time, I'm going to show up for coffee. So I walked into Tim Hortons and they were there with 9 other men of the same age. They take over half of Tim Hortons in Arnprior on any given day of the week. And my cousin saw me and stood up and came towards me, and someone said to him, "Oh, that woman's almost as tall as you are." And he said, "She's always wished she was." He's always called me Shorty. So anyhow, off we go. The cousins are delighted to see me. We take a table by ourselves, and we have this wonderful conversation. And they were, of course, excited to see me, but I was blessed to see them, and so happy that they were just being there, having their cup of coffee, doing their thing. So a moment of grace in the middle of a Tim Hortons, which you wouldn't necessarily think of. So there they were, being. That's what we're called to. To be the best we are, to be open to the grace of God when we screw up, and to be the best Bill or Andrea or Leslie or whoever we are, the best Eric, E-R-I-C. And hopefully, like Eric, we'll be able to say at the end of our days, you were the best you could be, and we'll be able to say, I know. Thanks be to God. Amen.